Welcome back, guys. DGS on Cayman Wax. A few minutes past 3 p.m. What the hell's going on that we're not in storm mode? I'm serious. Cayman Wax is a joke. It's a joke. What is going on? Whenever they go into storm mode, we get to leave. So that's what's going on.
Or just stop talking for a while.
Anybody out there who has rental properties or has dreamed about having the income from rental properties, I have a new live client, DECA Property Management, and Steve and Zanny from the company are going to be on next and tell you all about that kind of stuff. Big news out of the Federal Trade Commission.
Yeah, I saw this.
This affects us.
Yeah, this is I know it's going to be dependent upon your industry that you're in, but there are other industries outside of like TV and radio that have non-competes, but not anymore. The Federal Trade Commission, this just came out within the last hour and a half, but I heard it in the news. I'm like, did they just say that non-competes have been banned? And I started looking it up, but yes, the Federal Trade Commission ruled today that that non-competes are now illegal. No employer can make any employee sign a non-compete anymore, and even if they do, it's not binding.
Wow.
Which
that's
is
huge.
It's a big deal. Now, there are exceptions, and I think if I read it correctly, because I only had a few minutes to look at it, the exceptions are for high-level executives.
Mm-hmm.
So presidents of companies, people that
Andrew.
Have... Right. But people that have, I think, more insider business knowledge as opposed to just
sure.
people on the ground employees, because the idea, of course, is... By having those, it restricts movement. Well, restricting the possibility. Think about it in sports, right? If you didn't have the ability to move, you wouldn't have leverage to get better contracts.
Yeah.
So for people in a lot of industries where non-competes are a thing, they are no longer a thing, according to the FTC, not FCC. Be interesting to see if there's any challenge to that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just a Federal Trade Commission ruling. It's not a new law passed by Congress.
I know that in case law for a long time, even back when I was practicing law, the courts didn't like it. This is America. It's freedom. It's liberty. And they didn't like when companies could keep employees from going other places and making a living.
Right.
And in our business, I mean, I think my non-compete is at 90 days, which is the very least they've ever done.
Right.
They wanted 6 months. My contracts before were a year, sometimes longer than that.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're my age, a year is a long time. It's not a big deal to Rach, but it's a big deal to me, so.
But I've always been fascinated by it, that it applies even if they let you go.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
so
now
even
you're
if they,
talking.
Right. So this,
like when
so,
you say Cayman Wax is a joke, that kind of thing. Casey, here I come.
Right. I mean, I've always been fascinated by that. So you're telling me you don't need me anymore. But I'm also
but
not allowed to go work somewhere else.
Work.
So I'm so important that I can't work for a competitor, but you don't need me more. That has happened to me. Did not happen to me involving KMOX. That's never been a case when I've been here. But it did happen to me at another spot where they are letting you know we are not renewing your contract. And also,
you just got to go home.
And also, you've got 90 days after that you cannot work in the market or whatever.
Well, anybody
like that.
Out there that's a contract employee or you have a non-compete, check that out because you may be able to.
I mean, don't just assume. Although a lot of people do, Dave. They just ignore it and say, well,
sue me
and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't have the sue me money. You know, a lot of people are like, well, I don't have to hire a lawyer to defend and all that. So a lot of times it's just been easier for people to say, all right, I'll just sit out the 90 days and, you know, figure something out.
Yeah.
So, interesting ruling.
So, the term is being on the beach.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what they say in other industries, but in our industry,
yep.
it's like, oh, here, Dave, he got fired. He's on the beach
for the next year.
I used to literally think you were on the beach. I was so stupid.
I wish, man.
I really literally, I'm like, well, that doesn't sound bad at all.
Yeah, during my time on the beach, I don't think I spent a minute on the beach.
Yeah, Dave got fired. He's on the east side for like 6 months. I'm like, oh.
That's a more believable term, but also.
Yeah.
Ew.
So Voyager?
Yeah, so I wanted to bring this up too. Just to put it on the list of things that are just super amazing about human beings. So Voyager 1 is obviously the furthest thing we've ever sent away from the planet Earth. It is 15 billion miles from Earth. And for a while it was like months, maybe a year. Every bit of communication that came back from the Voyager was garbled and we couldn't understand it. We couldn't decode it. We thought, oh man, this thing's shot. But engineers here found a way using software to fix the problem 15 billion miles away. They figured
a workaround.
This was built
in the 70s, right?
Yes. Right. So it's not.
We couldn't even dream of the kind of stuff we have.
Right.
Now.
And it's not with today's software, right. With today's technology.
So we're updating,
yes,
1970s technology from billions of miles away.
So if my understanding is correct, what we figured out is there was a chip that somehow went bad. Okay. Whether it was just it got old or something, space debris hit the Voyager, whatever. But some chip was now bad, and that was causing everything to get jumbled. And they found a way from Earth, 15 billion miles away, to change how the information was processed to see if that would work. And apparently now we're getting messages back that we can understand again.
It's crazy.
That's insane.
It is crazy.
And then sometimes power goes out for days, mm-hmm, right here on Earth.
Yeah.
Right here. And yet we could have the engineers figure out how to fix that communication problem. It is, I mean, I'm joking about the thing on Earth here. I understand, you know, why that is. But that's amazing that we can figure that out with what you're talking about. Is like, if this is 40, 50-year-old technology.
I don't think they expected it to still be operating.
I can't believe it.
I don't think they expected it to be operating even 20 years ago.
So also, I know I'm terrible at the math, but that seems like a really far away distance away in 50 years.
Yeah.
Like 15 billion miles.
Yeah. That's a long way. I don't think it has thrust. So I think it's going at 18,000 miles an hour or whatever it is.
Probably.
We go in orbit.
Yeah. But that is, again, fascinating, amazing, and that it's that far. And by the way, that it's that far and you're still not near anything.
Isn't it funny, too? Like yesterday when we were talking to Avi Loeb, the head of astronomy at Harvard.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know more about that stuff than the average bear because I'm a dork.
Yep.
Right? Just that's it. It's not that I'm smarter than anyone else. It's just that I spend my time reading physics I don't understand. But every time I talk to him, I dream that I'm going to say something and he's going to be like, hold the phone.
Yeah. He's going to be like,
we've had a breakthrough.
What did you just say?
Dave, my best friend.
And then you'll notice a couple times a segment, I'll put something out like that. Just like, you know, you ever think about this one? And I was like, yeah, when I was 8.
I mean, for a guy like that, is there anything but dumb questions?
It's a good question.
Asked outside of the profession, right? Like, I'm sure his peers, they're not asking dumb questions.
You know
but
what,
everybody
though?
Else has to be asking a question that to them is like, this is elementary, buddy.
I think that some of the best questions for everyone come from people outside of what you do.
Yeah.
Like, Riz on the Rizzuto show, he's not going to ask me something that's going to surprise me. And I'm not going to ask him something that's going to surprise him. We do the same thing for a living. But if I talk to a carpenter, he may ask me a question about radio that I'm like, holy crap, I've never thought of that.
Yeah.
I found that when I was a lawyer. So
that's the moment we're looking for with Avi.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying too hard to be like Avi. I should just ask the dumb Dave questions and have him go like, man, that's a really good question.
Yeah, that's so good.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 320. So as advertised, I have a new live client, DECA Property Management. Steve Young is the owner or one of the owners, and he is in now. Great to see you again.
Hi, Dave. Thanks.
So you have a really good, solid family St. Louis small business story. I really enjoyed hearing your story.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. Back in the late 80s, my dad was a college professor, taught at St. Louis U School of Medicine. He had 10 kids, so I have 9 siblings.
Wow.
So he decided we ought to get into real estate. We got 10 kids, all with different talents. So he said, let's start buying some properties. So we bought some properties, and he assigned some of my brothers to do the maintenance and some to collect the rent.
That's like a sociology experiment.
It was.
You're like, why am I the custodian?
Yeah, we're like, whatever, Dad, whatever you say. And then the phone started ringing. And at that point, there was only 2 or 3 property management companies in St. Louis. And people were asking us to manage their properties. So in 1990, we formed DECA Property Management, DECA for 10.
Love it.
10 family members. And my mom ran the show. She took care of everything, assigned tasks, and sort of was awesome. And after her passing, her spirit still lives with our company today. And she had really one message, do the right thing.
Nice.
And that message we try to live by every day with our clients.
And so when I went to law school, I was like Woody Boyd off the farm. I thought I was Abraham Lincoln, right? I thought everyone was going to be like, oh my God, you're a lawyer. Let me shake your hand. I didn't realize everyone hated lawyers. And so I learned pretty quickly I was in a business with a bad reputation, and no one likes landlords. No one likes people who manage property, right? So that has to have been a big challenge for you and your family to overcome that when people kind of start out with that.
Absolutely. And we've really focused on that one issue, and we have so many tenants who come to us with a bad experience, and we try to change that, providing great customer service, being transparent, and just being honest. And that goes a long way, and it takes a while for them to come around, but eventually they find that we are different. There's a deck of difference, and we treat people right.
Yeah, it's a complicated thing. You're talking about physical structures with plumbing and electric and, you know, HVAC. Things are going to go wrong. You're talking about people. I mean, it's one of those things you just have to have a little grace with each other.
Absolutely. And to, you know, we manage properties for owners. So whether that's a single family home, two family, all the way up to a 100 unit complex. And what they ask us to do is to protect their investment. So finding quality tenants, collecting the rent, maintaining the property is the core of what we do. But, you know, we say we're a property management business, but we're really a people business, taking care of people, treating them the right way, and respecting their privacy, yeah, their dignity, and the fact that they need to have a nice place to live.
Talk a little bit about what a familiar story it is that, say, someone like me that's done pretty well in his career and decides to expand. I'm going to take a little bit of my money. I'm going to buy an apartment building. I'm going to buy a four-family unit. And how hard can this be? And then you find out how hard this can be.
It's really interesting because you buy a stock and you or a bond and you put it away. Nowadays, you don't even get the stock certificate. It's at your investment bankers. But real estate's real, right? So, you know, you do all your homework. You buy it, you do all your numbers, and then you own it. And then you're like, oh, no, what do I do? Hiring a property management company is critical. We have the experience. We have the expertise knowing federal, state, and local laws. We know how to screen tenants. We know how to fix properties, do the maintenance, do it in an affordable way. So that's the key component of owning real estate, whether it's a single-family home or a large complex. The property management part of it is critical.
So what about people who are listening right now who say, not doing anything sounds great. Having you do everything sounds fantastic, but I have to make some money.
You know, we think because of our expertise that we can actually make you more money by hiring us than you doing it alone. We know the market values, so we get top dollars for rents. We save you from that 2 a.m. phone call.
Which is worth a lot of money.
Which is worth money. And we enhance the value of the property. So if you look at it over a long-term period of time, I think it's more affordable to hire a property management company.
And you guys have units of all price points, all budgets.
Yes, we manage all throughout the St. Louis area. And we have rents of $500 and we have rents of $5,000.
And so everyone gets treated the same.
Everybody's treated the same. My mom and dad instilled that on us. If you can only afford a $500 unit, then we're going to take care of you.
Yeah.
So that's been our philosophy.
Did the kids stick with it, your siblings?
So I have two brothers who are currently work with us at the company. I have a sister-in-law who works with us. And I have one other brother who's a subcontractor to us. So 4 out of 10 is not bad.
Not bad. How about the next generation? Anyone showing interest?
There is two nephews who currently work for us. So we hope to carry on that tradition.
Yeah. What are some of the things that people don't usually think about when they're thinking about getting into property?
Well, there's a lot of different things. I think the hardest part is tenant screening. Probably the most important thing we do. If you mess up on that part, it can lead to lots of problems.
And legal problems.
Legal problems, for sure. And then the maintenance. You have to keep the property nice. You have to invest in the property. So deferred maintenance and preventive maintenance is really important. And those are the big things.
Yeah. What has been the most rewarding part of it for you doing it so far?
I think when somebody gets an apartment or gets a home and the joy and the happiness of that family, especially when it's their first home or apartment. That brings us great joy. And when we can take a lot of burdens and pressures off owners. A lot of them come to us the first time because they had a bad experience and they're in a bad spot.
Yeah.
For us to take it on and to enhance the property and to make their life better, that brings us joy also.
And I know you guys are not in the business of crapping on other property management businesses, but you have to be very careful because the only thing worse than managing the property yourself is hiring a company that does a bad job of it.
Absolutely. Like anything else, I mean, the quality of the company is really important. 34 years we've been doing it. We've experienced every situation possible. We know how to deal with the situation. We're well-staffed. A lot of our competitors are using virtual assistants and doing remote stuff. We're here locally. We have 55 staff members who take care of our properties. So we're very proud of what we do.
Doing it the right way. So if you own a property that you would like to have managed, if you're just interested in, I've always thought about buying a property, or if you're looking for a property and you want to be treated fairly and with dignity, DECAPM.com, DECAPM.com, 314-631-3306. Steve, thanks for your confidence in me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave.
Man, I've really come around on Fleetwood Mac. When I was young and they were big, I was a rocker, and they had chicks. And so it was just like, yeah, whatever. If I'm a woman, maybe I'll listen to this someday. And just didn't give them nearly their due. Oh, my. They're so good.
And this is like the biggest selling album of all time.
Isn't it amazing, the stuff you miss out on by being stupid?
Oh, yeah.
And being like stereotyping things and, you know, just whatever it happens to be, like, oh, yeah, I'm not into that. Like, yeah. By the way, hello, Dave. Welcome to the show. I do
that. That's why we listen to Fleetwood Mac, because they did have chicks.
But like, I would have loved to have been in theater. I'm made for it. I would have loved to have acted. And it wasn't like I was popular. It wasn't like I was giving up any ground. I'm exactly the kind of person who's in theater. But I didn't, because I was afraid it would keep me from somehow one day vaulting into popularhood.
Yeah.
And then my senior year, all the popular boys decided to be in Grease. And I'm like, well, you gotta be kidding me, son of a bitch. This whole time I could have done it. Like, I just didn't do it for the dumbest reasons.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm bad with, like, deciding that something is, like, overrated and not as good as it really is. Just without even, like, seeing the movie or listening to the song or whatever. And then
all guilty of that. Never more than now.
And then you listen to it, it's like, oh, I could have been listening to this whole time. This song's great.
So, Dave, we've got a little bit of weather going through.
Yeah, and we almost can split the area in half going from north to south. St. Louis to the north and to the east and to the west, it's wet. There's periods of showers, some rumbles of thunder, some brief downpours of rain. But you go to the south, like Union, St. Clair, even like Wildwood hasn't seen much rain. Oakville, Waterloo, Festus, down to Farmington, not a drop of rain out of this thing. Now, probably we'll see a little rain as we go into the evening, but some showers around. Don't be surprised if you hear a rumble of thunder or see a flash of lightning up through probably about 7 o'clock tonight, and then it's all gone. Northwest wind comes in. Skies clear out. It gets chilly overnight, 45. Beautiful day on Wednesday. Plenty of sunshine, 68 degrees. Thursday, partly sunny, 72. Just a tiny chance of a shower Thursday afternoon. Would not worry about it. Then increasing showers and thunderstorms late Thursday night throughout the day on Friday. And we mentioned yesterday, some of these could be strong to severe Friday afternoon into Friday evening. And another shot of strong to severe weather over the weekend, but especially on Sunday afternoon. It's going to be very warm and very windy and very humid over the weekend.
Okay. Headlines, Rach?
Brought to you by Schnucks. Reward yourself daily with the Schnucks Rewards app. All right, this is kind of a cool story. They were digging at George Washington's Mount Vernon home, archaeologists were, and they made a remarkable discovery. Would anyone like to guess what they found?
Martha.
Wooden teeth.
Wooden teeth, yeah, that's what I would go
with. They finally found Martha.
Martha.
They discovered two sealed bottles containing cherries in the ground beneath the cellar.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, wow.
Kind
That's
of ironic.
Cool. That.
A little on the nose.
Did they find the tree?
They did not find the tree, but I'm assuming these cherries were from the
That is
famed
super cool.
tree. Yeah, it's pretty neat. They were intact 18th century cherries in the bottle, which
Man.
The archaeologists say was incredibly exciting. The contents of the bottle will undergo laboratory analysis, and the bottles they were found in will be conserved for eventual display.
That is the era of time, to say the George Washington time, that is so recent,
mm-hmm.
yet so long ago. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's hundreds of years ago, and yet you feel a connection to it because it's only like a couple of lifetimes ago.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't like the way that sounds. I don't know why. Like it feels like it should. It feels like it should be further back.
Feels it like does. It should be an eternity.
But it's obviously not, because like, and I just like when you're thinking about our revolution, right? The revolutionary time, like that's. I just started watching the TV show, the Franklin TV show about Ben Franklin with Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
He's really annoying as Ben Franklin, but the show itself is actually pretty cool. And it's weird. It's like, he's like, hey, I'm supposed to be Ben Franklin, but I'm Michael Douglas. Like, it just comes across weird. But the show's interesting because of the time period. And it's that time period where the country could have not made it. And that's not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not that long ago. And it's weird. But I'm fascinated by the revolutionary time because you don't have any, like Civil War, you had a little bit more. You had photos, you had a little bit more evidence of what was going on. But obviously at that time, you just, it's all stories.
A growing number of young people are swapping college for vocational schools that offer paid on-the-job training. Researchers say there has been a shift, especially among members of Generation Z. According to a survey by New America, more than half of Gen Zers say it's possible to get a well-paying job with only a high school diploma, provided one acquires other skills.
Hmm. I
so
think
this
it's
is what
a,
we're always talking about.
Yeah, I think it's a harder argument than ever. I think Gen Z is savvy in a lot of ways, and I think if you tell them you can go to college.
They're calling them the toolbox generation.
Yeah, you can go to college, you can spend all this money, and then maybe you can try and find like an office gig or whatever. Yeah. Or you can go get paid to learn and then have a guaranteed job out of that.
So, Phoebe's Gen Z, right?
I believe so.
Maybe a little bit older Gen Z, but she's having so much fun in college. It's hard to imagine the kids maybe 5 years behind her that are solid younger Gen Z not wanting to go have that experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of people just can't afford it. Like, I couldn't afford the college experience, and that's why I didn't have, that's why I went to community college.
Same.
And I love the fact that it's being, like, destigmatized now, and people are saying, like, you don't have to do this. Yeah, it is super appealing because they're basically making it a vacation for
yes.
I mean, you have to study and you have to work hard, but they're making it, like,
in college,
they're making
sure.
it an incredible, like, boutique experience.
I remember when Nick moved into an apartment. So, you know, dorm first year, he wasn't a frat guy, and then apartment. And when I went to see it, and I still remember it, I'm like, you will never live in a place like this again until you're in your 40s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that nice. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Black granite countertops and just dude.
Chick-fil-A at the dining hall
yeah.
or
yep.
whatever on
yeah.
the credit. Yeah.
A Florida couple is accused of trying to cash in a fake $1 million lottery ticket. So this happened in Florida. Like I said, they took two scratch-off tickets and made a new one by taping pieces from both together. They then brought the bogus ticket to lottery officials, saying it had been damaged when it fell out of the car during a rainstorm.
I respect the effort.
Right. The woman yeah. said she tried to scratch the ticket before it was dry and it started falling apart, so she taped it. Her husband told authorities that they'd found the wet ticket on the ground, so their stories yeah. were, you know, not matching up from the beginning. They've each been charged with presenting a forged state lottery ticket, forging a lottery ticket with the intent to defraud, and a grand theft of $100,000 or more. If convicted, they face a maximum sentence of 40 years in prison.
Ooh. So I'm one of those people that only buys lotto tickets when it's like $1 billion. And every time I have the same thought, like I'll get the tickets because I usually get $20. Like give me 10 on Powerball, give me 10 on Mega Millions. And I'll take the tickets, I'll shove them in my pocket with gum and frogs and whatever I have in my Leave It to Beaver pants. And then I think...
Snails and puppy dog tails.
Yeah, like what if I have the winning ticket? Like it just... You know, like if I'm watching on television and I have and like, well, the winner bought it at a QT in St. Louis, I'd be like, oh, I'd immediately be like looking through all my jeans and it's stuck to something. And
the frog ate part of my winning ticket.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if there is a way for them to tell if they know like, oh, it was from this machine at 2:18 p.m. on a Saturday. Well, there you are. You're the guy buying it right there.
Yeah, because it says like it says exactly where the ticket's from, right? Like it doesn't just say it doesn't give like just the state or whatever. I think it says like the date and time and everything.
Oh, they know exactly what store it came from.
Yeah. So theoretically, I would think that would be part of the authentication process is that you would, they would check the camera feed and make sure, this guy who was in buying it and he bought it at this time.
With an eye on plastic waste after Earth Day, Starbucks is rolling out new cups. Their new cold drink cups have 20% less plastic.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Every little bit helps.
More adults are taking gap years, and companies are allowing it, much like college students who step away from their studies for a gap year to travel and see the world. Adults in the workforce are starting to see the value in taking extended time off as well. So this is an emerging trend.
Who can afford a gap year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like as a professional human.
Mm-hmm. And is your job going to be there when you finishing gapped?
Yeah.
You can make some money before you do that.
Yeah. It's hard to imagine. I mean, it's amazing.
I mean, if you can do it, wonderful.
One more story. Airfare is expected to be higher this summer due to the decreased supply of Boeing planes. The aircraft manufacturer is delivering fewer planes than expected after the year began with a mid-flight blowout on one of its planes.
So they can't keep planes in the air, so we have to pay more to go to Cancun.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
You know, you could always just stop that at we pay more. Yeah. It's pretty much always the outcome.
Every single time.
Yep.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we have the Think Tank with Mike Elam and Alvin Reed. What's the controversy about men versus women Olympic uniforms?
Oh, yeah. I think, was it you, Rach, that had it?
Yeah, I had wanted to ask Amy about it as a runner.
It's a fascinating thing. It's been going on for a long time now, right? Like, so the new uniforms just came out from Nike. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of buzz. I don't know what you say, Rach. It's pretty much social media, but it's been a few athletes also that are critical of how revealing the women's uniforms are. Like they're very small.
Are these the competition uniforms?
Like track and field. Okay. Yeah. Like the things you compete in. Okay. So, you know, like women's track and field, they're wearing tights, right? They're very tiny. It's like a bathing suit essentially. Yeah. But this year it's a little bit like higher cut in the hips area.
It doesn't cover your whole area.
Yeah.
We'll put it that way. Like you'd have to be doing some maintenance.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And
it seems wrong.
Yeah. So my take is some of the athletes that are involved were like, yeah, they asked us and we put them on and we tried them and we said they're okay. And they're, you know, these are the most, we gave a ton of feedback on these. So there's a little debate there, but one thing that's not, and that's why I wanted to zoom out a little bit and not be about that specific thing. But this has been a real question for a long time. Like when you see beach volleyball in the Olympics, or the dudes are wearing board shorts and the women are wearing bikinis, really small bikinis. Now, I don't know what choice the athletes have in what they wear. I don't know if it's just that's the culture and you're going to do that, or if, hey, listen, you don't have any choice. This is your uniform. Mm-hmm. But I know that there was a big story not long ago, and I forget, it might have been weirdly Bulgaria or something, but their handball team had uniforms come out. And the men's uniforms were just like, you know, kind of tight-fitting shirt and loose shorts, whatever. And the women's were like skin-tight everything. And it's just this odd thing that why are all of the women's outfits in the Olympics or in a lot of the Olympic sports so much more revealing than the men's? It's a weird.
Yeah.
And then what was it? Maybe, I forget when it was, but the guy that used to run the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, a guy named Sepp Blatter, said, the women's uniforms need to be sexy.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
The guy named Blatter.
Yeah, to get people to watch it. Yeah. So It's always been that, and I've always wondered it myself, too, when you think about, like, men's versus women's uniforms in various sports. Yeah. They don't all play the same sport. You look at softball and baseball, the uniforms aren't very different. Same, basically same type of thing. Basketball, same type of thing. But then you start looking at Olympic sports, and it's a little bit different.
Yeah, interesting.